this is what you get. It's like fractal, narcissism, that no matter where you pull this apart, no matter what aspect you look at, you're going to see the same narcissism. So I got a question from Nicholas in France this week, and I would like to address that. Here's Nicholas's question. There's a growing interest here in France in a relatively new field called collapsology. It defines itself as the transdisciplinary exercise of the study of our industrial civilization's collapse and what might come after it, based on the two cognitive modes of reason and intuition and on a body of serious scientific works. It appears as a kind of school of thought which acknowledges that industrial civilization is inherently unsustainable and that it will collapse. It reflects and discusses ways to prepare for this impending collapse for those who live inside industrial civilization. It is careful not to antagonize the different social classes that comprise our industrial and capitalistic society. This is probably why we increasingly hear about it on TV and in mainstream media. It doesn't engage much with existing social struggles and doesn't express solidarity with the many struggles of the people being oppressed and killed by industrial civilization all over the world. They do mention in passing the fact that industrial civilization thrives on inequalities and on injustices, but that doesn't seem to bother them much. The primary concern of its proponents is not the fate of the natural world, nor is the fate of others in general, but it's the fact that industrial society is not sustainable and thus that they'll be in trouble when it does collapse, even though they sometimes recognize that the sooner the collapse, the better for everyone. Indeed, the main concern is not primarily to stop the harm that industrial society inflicts on the natural world, on the living species, on indigenous peoples, and so on, but is trying to come up with ways to soften the looming collapse for them, for civilized men and women, that is. In this, they converge with the transition town model, improving local resilience, etc. They also focus on an internal transition, on the importance of oneself to deal with the realization that industrial civilization is unsustainable, that an end is coming, on the stress this creates for humans, for industrial humans. What does that inspire in you? So, I love this question, and I hate the subject that the question deals with. This culture has from the beginning been narcissistic and sociopathological. And this response is precisely what we would expect at this stage of collapse from narcissists and sociopaths. And what I mean by that, well, let me back up. There is a fairly standard response we can expect from abusers, no matter whether these are perpetrators of domestic violence or whether they are from, you know, corporations poisoning entire landscapes. And that is, the first response is to deny that the abuse ever happened, to simply deny that the landscape is toxified. The next step is to, once the evidence is so clear that the landscape is toxified, then the next step is to say, well, you can't tie it to the fact that we were dumping cyanide onto the landscape. And who knows, how do you know that it's our cyanide and not some other cyanide? So this is in line with what is very common among perpetrators of abuse, whether this is a standard domestic violence situation or whether this is a corporation toxifying a landscape, where the first step is to deny that the abuse is happening. Once again, whether in a domestic violence situation or whether it is in the toxification of the total environment. So the corporation would say, no, there is no evidence that the landscape is toxified. We need to study this for a while. And then once it comes clear that the landscape is in fact toxified, they will say, well, okay, so landscape is toxified, but you don't know that it's our fault. You don't know that we toxified it. You can't make that connection. So you have to study that for a while. And then once it's very clear that it is theirs, then they say, well, yes, it did toxify, but there isn't real harm from this. And then once you establish that, yes, there is in fact harm, the next step is to say, well, yes, there may be harm, but things have changed now and things are better. And those are the bad old days and we need to just look forward now. And then when it's clear that things have not in fact changed and that things are just as bad or worse, then the next thing is for them to figure out, frankly, how to turn that to their advantage too. Another reason I think that collapse is being mentioned these days is it's simply damage control. Because this culture is based on faith. And, you know, the entire economic system is based on faith. The notion there'll be pie in the sky by and by when you die. And that's the same sort of technotopian hope, is that there will be pie in the sky someday in the future. There will be a heaven on earth made by technology. And that's based on faith. And, you know, we all know that the economic system is based on faith, that the reason we all believe that dollars or Bitcoin or gold has value is because we believe it has value. And when the faith in that value goes, the entire economy goes. And so a typical tactic that is used by narcissists collectively to address atrocities is, of course, to avoid them. But when they're so obvious that they must be mentioned, they will be corralled and they will be mentioned in as briefly as possible and without as much and with as little context as possible. And there's a great example of this discussed in People's History of the United States, where he mentions a textbook that mentions that Christopher Columbus committed genocide and then drops it to talk about all the great things Christopher Columbus did. And the point is that the point that he's making there is that, yes, they say the word genocide. Yes, they mention it in one sentence, which means they can't be excused of not raising it at all. And this inoculates them. It's a vaccination is what it is. It inoculates them against the larger criticism. It takes control of the criticism and internalizes it and then shunts attention in the direction that they want it to be shunted. So everybody knows this system cannot last. The system is killing the planet. And how do you take control of the narrative surrounding collapse? What you do is you mention it explicitly, and then you attend to it only in the ways that serve you. And the same thing is happening with global warming. This is why the whole bright green movement is so brilliant in a sense, and just horrible because it's killing the planet, but it's so brilliant. We can't ignore that global warming is happening. So what we need to do is shunt it, shunt the attention away from the real horrors of the culture and toward solar, toward wind, toward solutions that are self-evidently absurd and incommensurate with the problem. And in fact, don't solve the problem at all. But because they've seized the narrative, they've been able to shift it. So this is something else that we see with collapse, is how can we mention it in a way that does not in any way threaten our continued way of life that is based on the exploitation, degradation, and extermination of others. Well, this is a pretty brilliant way to do it. Yes, we're going to talk about it. Yes, collapse is happening. But they don't talk about why. They don't talk about the effects of this collapse on anybody but us. Once it's clear, once it becomes, the evidence becomes overwhelming that industrial civilization is inherently unsustainable and it will collapse, and that whatever resilience you do may make your little lifeboat work, float for another 15 minutes, that's not really going to help, then you still look to soften the blow on you. And who gives a shit about the rest of the world that's being destroyed by this way of life? And, you know, this is not unique to collapse. It's not unique to this. This is what we see every day in every aspect of this culture. This is what you get. It's like fractal narcissism, that no matter where you pull this apart, no matter what aspect you look at, you're going to see the same narcissism. So, for example, this is why almost every article you see in the mainstream news about the collapse of biomes, a collapse of species, all turn back to how it affects the economy. So they will do an article about how deep sea, the very, very deepest parts of the ocean are undergoing environmental collapse because of this culture. And they'll say, this is a real drag because there are all sorts of species down there that might be economically valuable to us. And this is precisely the equivalent of me saying, oh my God, this is so terrible that your family is dying from the toxins from put out by my factory. I'm so sorry that your family is dying, because when your family dies, who's going to buy my products? And, you know, there is a line. There's a dreadful movie in the 1970s, one of the most misogynist movies I've ever seen, called, I don't remember if it's called A Boy and His Dog or A Dog and His Boy. It's one of those two, written by Harlan Ellison, who is a terrible misogynist. But the line, honest, the movie had one of the best lines about this culture that I've ever seen anywhere. And that's the conceit of the movie is that it's a post-apocalyptic scenario where there are very few women, lots of really nasty men roaming around, and whenever any of the men find a woman, they rape her to death. And very early in the movie, there is the main character comes across a woman who was recently raped to death, and he says, oh man, this is terrible, terrible. It's too bad they did this. Looks like she had a couple of uses left in her. And for me, that has precisely encapsulated the attitude of this culture toward the entire planet. That when the entire planet goes down, the primary concern of most of the people in this culture will be, oh man, this is just terrible. This is horrible. We could have made a little bit more money. And we will blame the planet for what it won't be our fault. It will be that goddamn planet died on us before we could achieve our true destiny. And here's another way this narcissism always manifests, is that have you ever noticed how anytime anybody discovers something wonderful about the natural world, it has to come back to how could that help us? So, for example, they find out that lobsters don't age the way most beings do. Lobsters could theoretically not die of old age. They don't senesce like you do, like I do, like most creatures who reproduce, almost every creature who reproduces sexually. That's part of the bargain for reproducing sexually, is that you die, and that allows the younger genetic material, the younger beings with genes to grow up and recombine. But lobsters don't senesce. It's a weird thing. They can still die. They can still eat my cod, and they can still catch a disease, and they can still get crushed by a rock, but they don't actually, like an elderly lobster gentleman would not need Viagra. Let's just put it that way. In fact, their sexual vibrancy is greater as it gets older. It's an extraordinary thing. So any article you see about that immediately goes, gosh, how can humans like recombine, take some genetic material from lobsters to make it so we don't age? Or you find out how some creature will do, it doesn't matter what it is, some creature has some amazing ability. The thought is, how do we use this for ourselves? So it's, this culture takes everything and says, gosh, forget everybody else in the world. Forget the victims of this culture. Forget those who are destroyed by this culture. Forget those who are driven extinct by this culture. All that matters is how it affects us. So when that happens with every other part of this culture, why would it surprise us that this is how the collapse is approached as well?